The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Welcome and good night to The Doctor Is In with me, Dr. Denothor Archer Cartwright. I'm a family medicine specialist, consultant in family medicine and preventative care. We're here every Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. on Guardian Radio. Welcome to the show. Brought to you tonight, of course, by Medical Concierge Services for all your medical health care needs, all your primary care needs. We're at 72 Collins Avenue in the Heart Center building. And you can give us a call, 326-1521, or our WhatsApp line for those of you on WhatsApp, 429-4880. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, and of course our website, www.mcsfamilymedicine.com, and you can take a look at all of our services, including home care, IV vitamins, and more. And so we try to treat the entire family and keep everybody healthy and safe. So thank you for joining with me tonight. This topic, really, I've been thinking about it for a while, and I think with everything that's happening, I really, really needed to speak on it. Just to touch on something that's happened recently with the young child that was abused and that died. This situation just really, really, like, hurt my heart so much to see that things like this would be happening in our community. I just want to take a quick moment of silence for that child's life and hope that things like this become a distant memory. So I want to thank everybody, you know, that took a short moment of silence, that we all could just think and reflect on how all of these things are affecting our society. You know, it's just cruel that people would harm a child in that particular way, and it saddens me that things like this is becoming what it seems a lot more frequent. And so it really challenged me to look deep and to say, you know, what all needs to be said and done. It's important that we look out for children and we do our best to keep them safe in all things. So I wanted to talk about this topic tonight about vaccines and children. And it's really been playing on me to kind of speak out and talk. And Dr. Ben Carson, I don't know if you know him, he spoke out recently on his thoughts about vaccination in children. So I thought it'd be interesting to kind of look at how does COVID really affect children and what have we been seeing. I realized that there was a great discrepancy about how people perceived COVID in children from the very beginning. I want to thank God that for whichever reason, however this worked out, a devastating disease for most children. Every loss is definitely a sad one, but I thank God that it hasn't been a devastating disease for children. But in the light of everything that was happening, people were a little bit panicked. People were very kind of paranoid. And even though that there was an evidence that it wasn't devastating in children, people were very guarded with their children. Of course, you expect them to be that way. But as the pandemic played out and we got more and more evidence that it was a particular population of people that really get affected by COVID, we didn't really see a shift in that mindset very early. I remember during some of the more of the lockdown period, and I had my daughter with me, and I tried to get into the food store, and they were just like, oh, there's no children. And I was like, where did this policy come from? But yet there were elderly people standing on the line and shopping in the grocery store. People really don't understand this thing. People don't understand what's going on. And so I knew that it was going to, there was a lot of. So how the risk of COVID-19 for kids compared to other dangers, that is something I think which would make it more unlikely for people to understand. So I found an interesting article. You know, I like to share articles. I like to share data and statistics so that we are all kind of on the same page. And this is not just my opinion, but this is actually stuff that's out there. And so, and this topic is also timely because we're talking about kids going back to school, which I thought kids should have been in school. There's lots of evidence out there that the policies that we've taken, particularly in things like school closures, have been very detrimental to their social health and their physical health as well. And so we're seeing such crazy outcomes of not just what's happening in society, but how some children are doing well in school, some children are missing. When we talk about the Bahamas and virtual learning, we just don't know where some children are. And so there's a lot of confusion that have come out of policies that were said to be there to protect us from COVID. Were some of them necessary? Probably not. We were very heavy-handed early on. I can understand the pullback, but as we went through, we continued to be extremely heavy-handed. And then we were not prepared to then transition back into everyday life. And so we lost a lot of ground in a lot of areas in child development and child safety. And I think what we're seeing today is a combination of all of these things. Ms. Kobe online, thank you for joining us. Please share for those of us who are joining us. We are on Facebook as well as Guardian Live. So we're going to talk today, how does that risk for children compared to other problems, how we should be looking at it, and how do we kind of move forward? And then I'm going to play a little of that clip from Dr. Ben Carson, because he said something very straightforward on his opinion, and I kind of agree with him. So I'm going to play that as well in a bit. But I'm going to look first at this article and just give you kind of a little bit of background of COVID and children. So, you know, people really too got really excited because lately there was this talk that, you know, more children were catching COVID or whatever like that. So, you know, people really started to get a little bit paranoid, but we're going to see where that has a lot to do with policy once again. So the root of most of our issues, the situation and what we have done in response to dealing with COVID. So I'll skip the little first part. But it goes on to say there were reports this summer of more children under 18 falling ill with COVID-19, and some pediatric hospitals were said to be filling up, leading many to believe that the pandemic is now a serious threat to children. At the very least, it is abundantly clear now that children can be affected and transmit COVID. However, experts maintain that the risk most children face from COVID-19 are extremely low. Even with the Delta variant, the risk of children has not changed with the new variant, as far as we can tell. This was from the pediatric infectious disease physician at Albert Einstein College of Medicine. The Herald estimates that less than 2% of children known to be infected by coronavirus are hospitalized. 3% of those infected would actually die. It is difficult to draw direct comparisons between adults, but we know with adults, the hospitalization is closer to about 10%. Remember, children, it's 2%. And then the percent of persons that actually die is about 1%. So 0.03% of the 2% of the possible cases of kids with COVID. And what we found with children who have not done well with COVID or had what we call severe COVID, Many of those children are extremely ill children, children with cancers, children with leukemia and different things. And so healthy children are very, very low risk when it comes to COVID. We'll see, we'll even be able to compare those numbers to regular flu and how that looks. Children in COVID, as experts will prefer the data, we do have suggested that even the risk for long-term consequences like long COVID or MISC, in which several organs become inflamed, are also very low. So the complications from COVID is very, very low. All right, this is, with those low risks for children, will we still press for vaccination for those under 12? That's a good question, Ms. Kobe. We are getting to that very, very soon. So this is where it comes from. So remember now, even for the general population, COVID, catching COVID, you can catch it. Most people have mild symptoms. Very few have moderate symptoms, and even fewer of those people have severe disease. When we look at people with severe disease, those people all fall in the risk of usually very obese, multiple comorbidities, usually three, uncontrolled problem. When we look at kids, it's even less. It's even way, way less. Fractions of what we see in adults. And this is a good thing. This is why we're not seeing children dying like that with COVID and stuff. And the ones that are getting very sick, most of them are very sick children already. Okay? So we're going to get to that question because this is going to be something that we talk about because you've heard the conversation coming about vaccination and children. So I'm going to lead right up to that. So the Delta variant is both more transmissible and more widespread than other variants, which has meant that even at low risk, you might have more cases. But the Delta does not make children more sick. It has not made infected children sicker. So even if you're having more cases, what we found even with the Delta variant, it's still not making children sicker. It's still not increasing their chances of death. It's okay that there's more people catching it because the society has opened up and more. It might be more transmittable, but it has less death. So that is actually a positive thing. This is how viruses become endemic and just a regular part of our society, like the flu. We know that people catch the flu all the time. We don't remember that people die from the flu. In this country, 90 to 100 people every year, without all the testing that we've done for COVID, die of flu-like illnesses and pneumonia. So this is coming to a point where that's actually a good thing. It doesn't matter if more people catch it if people are not getting sick. So more cases does not always mean more death. That's what we've been seeing. We had that weird blip, I think in August, and then our cases actually is coming back down, and we've seen that before. Early in the year, you can see we had that rise, and then we kind of dropped off. It doesn't always mean more deaths. And so if the death rate is 0.01%, even if 1,000 children showed up with COVID, there would be no deaths. So even if 1,000 kids got COVID, we would not expect really to be any deaths per se. All right? So that's how we know that it's low rate on death. And so we don't want a ton of children catching COVID, but we know that even when we start getting, you know, thousands of kids with COVID, we're not going to see a lot of deaths. Unless some weird variant was to come around, which the current vaccine is not, you know, really made for, we're not sure yet, children are pretty much the ones out of the loop for COVID deaths. So kids are still at relatively low risk of severe COVID-19, and even the children that get it, the children with sequelae or who have consequences afterwards is also extremely. We compare them to other age groups, people under at much lower risk of serious illness from death of COVID-19. The death rate of Americans under 18 who were affected was about 0.01% compared to 5% in those who were 65 to 74 year olds, 12% in 75 to 84 year olds, and 25% in people 85 and older. In total, people 50 and up make up 94% of COVID deaths in the United States. And this is kind of globally across the world. It's a little skewed in Nassau because we do have a little bit of the middle-aged population that fall in the high risk because we do have a lot of comorbidities in this country. But as you can see, most of those people are going to be much older people that are going to fall into. When I talk on the show, I talk a lot about risk stratification, and we should have taken a risk-based approach to COVID rather than a generalized approach, because the numbers are very clear that the older persons, multiple comorbidities, three or more comorbidities, you're at the top there. You're not taking care of yourself. You know, your diabetes, your hypertension, everything is out of control. You're morbidly obese. You are going to be the person. So that is the elephant in the room that we don't want to talk about. And children, thank God, do not fall into this. When it starts getting children, the numbers drop drastically. In fact, from the age of 50, it's already like less than 1%. Okay. We've known from the beginning that COVID is relatively mild in children compared to adults, especially older adults. Pediatric infectious disease specialists at St. The risk is even lower for children under 10. As experts have said, infants under one are the only ones that show a little increase just because they have a, you know, immature immune system, but we still haven't seen COVID in babies or young children like that. Another way to compare COVID-19 to other significant causes of death. COVID-19 has killed maybe 280 children under the age of 18 through up to September 2021, the time span in which the Alpha and Delta variants were active. Flu and pneumonia, heart disease, drowning, guns, motor vehicles were all deadlier to children during the same time period annually from 2015 to 2019. So we can see that flu, pneumonia, heart disease, drowning, gun violence, motor vehicle violence, all of these things were deadlier. And so flu in quite some time. And when we look at the numbers, we can see that thankfully, the death rate in children and the severe cases in children is probably even a little bit less than what we would see with the common flu that we see everywhere. These are actually good things. So for some reason, you know, we think a different way, but this is actually a very good thing because you do not want to have a viral illness that's going around that's affecting children in any kind of immense way. And so COVID is actually underperforming the flu and pneumonia-like diseases. One example, children under the age of 18 who have died in vehicle crashes from January through September in recent years was nearly six times higher than the number of children who died of COVID-19, January through September of this year. These numbers can help us contextualize the risk of the best ways to communicate risk and from personally even it's of something that you know and would understand, okay? So that's how we are able to rationalize what this really means, how we need to tackle it, because we need to move away from just these broad kind of stroke ways of doing things and be very specific in the way we treat this. You know, so we've seen that it's been lower, we've been engaged. And what's interesting is that if I just came back from Florida, and in Florida, things are very open, their schools are very open. You know, they don't even have mask mandates. And so you would expect there to be extremely high cases. And what you're seeing is you're not seeing the high cases. In fact, their cases are going down. Some people hypothesize, or really when you think about it, how we would have treated viral infections in the past versus how we treated COVID, it was actually who are young and healthy, people who are not affected or in the risk group out there into the community, because they would be the persons that would not transmit COVID. So children have not been found to be a reservoir for spread. So a lot of places expected, you know, they'd open the schools and it'd be widespread. Even if there are cases, there aren't the kind of cases that were expected. And usually it's not that children who actually turn out to be spreading COVID. What about other risks for COVID-19 among children? One concern is multi-systemic inflammatory syndrome in children, which appears in some children who have COVID-19 infection. But even the risk this is extremely low. Around 4,500 cases deaths were confirmed in the U.S. in August 2017, according to the the Center of Disease Control and Prevention. At this point, there were 3.7 million cases of children with COVID. So you can see it's a very tiny fraction. We're not likely to really see any cases or hardly any cases, because even America with millions of cases are not seeing kids have these type of complications in large amounts or that type of death. And so MD41, out of all those confirmed cases, 3.7 million, Bahamas is very unlikely to see any cases. And remember, we talked about this affecting children who are very sick, children who are possibly very close to death. And so it gives us a different outlook on this. Healthy children hardly ever at risk for these severe types of COVID. So long COVID is a concern, but it's not a big concern. Still the research, lots of research has to be done and in order to look at this a lot more. And ages 5 to 17 in the UK, Lancet, which is a very good publication, did a child and adolescent health portion of it, found that less than 2% of the experienced symptoms for at least 8 weeks and symptom severity appeared to decrease over time. So they looked at a great amount, about 1,700 children, and less than 2% experienced any symptoms that lasted more than a few weeks, and those went away. So pretty calm or relatively not a long-term problem for children. And the thing about it is a lot of these things we haven't even talked about treatment, because we haven't been treating symptoms of COVID. We haven't been treating long-term symptoms of COVID, which we should be doing. If it was anything else, we would treat the inflammation and we would move on from it. So people should not be in suffering. Children, adults, they all can be treated. So you don't see these long-term sequelae in children is because things like long COVID happen more often with severe disease, which is less common for children. A study analyzing private healthcare claims by a nonprofit Fair Health found hospitalization COVID-19 patients were almost twice as likely to develop post-COVID conditions. So children are hospitalized as often, and so they do in turn not have so many of these long-term problems. The risk of children's transmission may pose to others. If kids continue to get infected, others will continue to get infected. But the amount of kids that are actually transferring because they seem to be asymptomatic is also extremely low. Children can transmit coronavirus, but they do it far less than adults do. So it's almost like most children are almost immune, or natural immunity is working for them as a defense against COVID. If I was looking at it, I would be looking at the immune system of a child and looking at what they possess and why is it that they seem to be less susceptible. And that's how science should work. We look at a group and we realize this group is not affected. You know, why is that? And what can we do to enhance everybody else's chances? And so that is what we should be looking at. Children's defense against COVID-19 have basically held up even with the new variants. And that's a good thing. Remains a very small threat to children overall. And nobody has explored why. People have just left it up in the air. One possibility is that children's immune systems are just better built to deal with a novel virus. Young viruses are novel, some defense passed on by their parents, and the protection from childhood vaccines. Kids adopt to pathogens around them through repeated exposure. So when a new coronavirus, the theory is that children were better able to deal with the threat. But for adults, especially older adults, who encounter a new pathogen, it's a rare thing in their immune system, you know, have been worn over time, and that's maybe why they were having it. But I think it's a good thing, and it's a very unusual thing, because usually, as we mentioned before with the flu, where you see more children actually being affected by flu and pneumonia, you tend to see this kind of bell-shaped, upside down curve, in the sense where very young children and older people tend to be susceptible. Luckily with COVID, we don't see that susceptibility in children. And we know across the board really changes with age and outcome. A little clip from Dr. Ben Carson, he was on Fox News, and he was talking about his thoughts on children getting the COVID vaccine. And I know this might be controversial for some people, but we have to look at, listen to all sides of the story. And producer, if you could play the clip of Dr. Ben Carson, if you have it.
Pediatric neurosurgery unit at Johns Hopkins. Do you agree with the CDC's decision to vaccinate children 5 to 11 with the Pfizer vaccine?
Absolutely not. The fact of the matter is, the mortality rate for children from COVID-19 is 0.025, which is very similar to the rate for seasonal. And you're going through all these things for seasonal flu. Plus, we don't know what the long-term impact of these vaccines is. So this is really sort of a giant experiment. Do we want to put our children at risk when we know that the risk of the disease to them is relatively small, but we don't know what the future risks are? Why would we do a thing like that? It makes no sense whatsoever. And also, you know, getting to this whole ideal of natural immunity, there have been a number of studies that have shown that it is very, very effective. You look at the Cleveland Clinic study, 1,300 of their healthcare workers who had been previously infected, none of them got reinfected. So I know the CDC is coming out with their recommendations and trying to spin yes. things their way. But, you know, we ought to look at all of the data. And then, you know, with the finances, just one more point. To count took you 12 days. To count to a billion, it would take you 31 years. To count to a trillion, it would take you 31,000 years.
Unbelievable.
So just to put that in perspective.
Dr. Carson.
Yeah, so that was a clip from Dr. Ben Carson. He's a pediatric neurosurgeon. Pretty amazing guy, really, really smart. He was also in the last administration. He was in housing. And, you know, he makes a case similar to what we've seen with the results that basically it's very low risk for children. We're not seeing deaths like that in children. And the children that are getting are sick are usually kids who are very ill. We don't want any of these children to die. But to broadly across treat or give therapeutics to kids and especially emergency use therapeutics to children across the board is something we may want to look at all of the data, one side of the data, because we do get kind of a one-sided approach to this where it's like, this is good, 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 good. But I think we need to get out over the panic of COVID and now start rationally and logically looking at what makes sense doing this versus risk-based. Let's talk a little bit more about what he said. And I read an article about that. So a former surgeon at the Johns Hopkins Children's Center describing the Biden administration's move to vaccinate young children for COVID as what he quotes, a giant experiment, arguing there is no sufficient data to determine the long-term risk posed by the shots. So this is where the risk analysis and balance comes in. This is the kind of talk and conversation that we should be having. What are the risks and what are the benefits? And does one outweigh the other? So children are not at risk for COVID in that degree where this is an amount. And what benefits would it provide when we don't see the hospitalization or the death rates like that? What is it? He just doesn't see it. I don't see it either. But there are risks because any medication that you put into the body, there are risks. And so we don't give children usually medication. I started in pediatrics. We use very minimal medication in children unless we have to. So this is medication. Now, some people might have a different train of thought on this, but I agree with some of this. I don't know the long-term, short-term, or medium-term kind of risk involved here. I remember that with Pfizer, the safety safety profile that they're watching for, it won't be completed until 2020. All the data we need, all right? It goes them to say, do we want to put our children at risk when we know that the risk of the disease to them is relatively small? But we don't know what the future risks are. Why would we do a thing like that? It makes no sense whatsoever, Dr. Carson said in a Sunday interview with Maria Bartiromo on Fox News Sunday Morning Futures. Carson, a renowned for his innovative surgeries to save the lives of children, so he's a pediatric doctor, is former director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Children's Center. So this is a well-known guy. He previously served as Secretary of Housing and Urban Development in the Trump administration. Carson, whether or not young children should receive the COVID vaccine, he said, absolutely not. The physician argued that the mortality rate for the children with COVID-19 is 0.025%, which is very similar to the rate of the years and years going through these things for seasonal flu. So we are not pushing anything. We know the seasonal flu vaccine is out there for whoever, but we're not pushing it on that. Carson also pointed out the study showing natural immunity is very, very effective. So a lot of children have had COVID. So that's a very important part of it. And we talked about earlier that children seem to have a defense. Their immunity seems to be better than the rest of us. Who had been previously infected and none of them got reinfected. So reinfection rates are very, very low. We're not considering natural immunity. We need to look at all of the data. And that is extremely important because we've taken a very narrow view for COVID. The Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices will meet, and we know the CDC has been saying everything is okay these days. The approval came 1 week after an FDA advisory panel, a vote of 17-0 to recommend a vaccine for young children, despite acknowledging the lack of safety data and nearly 100% survival rate from infection. So they acknowledge, the FDA acknowledged, that there was a lack of safety data and that nearly 100% of children survived from the infection. So, I mean, it's okay to have these things available if you want to, but what is the reasoning behind it? We are already aware that if you're vaccinated, you can transmit COVID. So you're not saving really other people in any particular way. The idea of herd immunity has gone to the wind because we have information that that's possible in that particular way. The only way we would have some form of herd immunity is if we were all to get COVID and our natural immunity lasted forever. So approval by the CDA will allow Pfizer to administer to young children. We've been hearing about it coming into the country. People have to make a decision. And so we should look at all of that, right? And so we constantly hear safe and effective, safe and effective. Fine, that's what you want to say. But what is the reason and do the benefits outweigh the risk? So that's what I'm saying completely. All right. And so we're never going to learn about how safe the vaccine is unless we start giving it. That's what one of the justifications was. So we are acknowledging that we're going to find out about the safety as it goes along. So I have a very different approach to children, and I prefer not to put children into that at all if you cannot give me a benefit. So the professor of medicine at Harvard School, member of FDA, Martin Koldoff, and CDC scientific advisor committee says, I do not think children should be vaccinated for COVID. I am a huge fan of vaccinating children for measles, mumps, polio, rotavirus, many other diseases. That's critical, but COVID is not a huge threat. Dr. Harvey Reese, professor of epidemiology in the Department of Epidemiology and Public Health at the Yale School of Public Health and the Yale School of Medicine, had a clear vision of what he would do if schools were to talk about mandating vaccines. If the children has a chronic condition that would make them a risk, yes, possibly. There is a reason to consider, and that's what I talked about, risk stratification. Other than that, he says, if it were my child, I would homeschool them. So he was very, very adamant that he was not for going across the board. And so I think, what I'm trying to say is We have time to think about these things. We have time to look at all of the information. We are not in the type of emergency as when this thing was novel. So we can use our critical thinking skills. We can look at all the data and we can make better decisions. I think a doctor I heard explained it the best, that we were kind of on this freight train of things that were going on and we didn't know how to stop. We didn't know how to get off. But all we have to do is press the brakes. Press the brakes and let's take another look. All right, so there are differing views in the medical community. People always think that there is complete consensus across the board, but there really isn't. We haven't been discussing issues in this particular manner, one view of thought, and that may not be the best thing. So broad strokes has never been an avenue that we take. So let's just take a quick break and then we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about risks, kids with COVID. And then I want to dive into a little bit about this new health and safety bill that's coming out. That's also very interesting. That's something that we should take a look at. But here you can see Dr. Ben Carson and some other doctors giving a totally different view. They do not see the necessity of it happening at this point with all the information we have. So let's take a quick break and we'll be right back on the Doctor's Zen with me, Dr. D. Archer.
Hubert Edwards Global, in collaboration with Dr. Dave Burrows and iRise, presents the 5th Annual Success Summit under the theme, Success Keys to Transform Your World, December 3rd through 4th. 2 days of transformational experiences with dynamic presenters from the Bahamas, Nigeria, Canada, USA, and Jamaica. You can't afford to miss this mind shift moment. 5 scholarship grants, 2 leadership awards, 1 life-changing event. This is a virtual event, so visit www.nlsolutionsbahamas.com for more details. This is what you've been waiting for. Success Summit 2021.
Our free pick, pack, delivery service gives everyone in the family aisles and prices right from home. Simply call or WhatsApp your order to 242-677-7266 or email order at amlfoods.com. A friendly customer service representative is waiting to pick, pack, and deliver your order to the mailboat of your choice. The options are truly endless, and with membership, you save even more. So order today and let Costrite pick, pack, and deliver right to you.
Hello, I'm Jermaine Kemp, a patient care assistant at Sunland Rehabilitation Center. I am one of many standing proudly on the front line of healthcare during the global COVID-19 pandemic, and I am vaccinated. I made a decision to get the AstraZeneca vaccine after attending an information session to learn more about it. I felt it was important to ensure that I did not spread the COVID-19 to my family, friends, and most importantly, depend on me for their care, and I consider it a privilege to serve. I invite you to join me in keeping our clients, colleagues, and community safe by choosing to be vaccinated. We can do this, Bahamas. Together, we can beat COVID-19 one vaccination at a time.
This message has been brought to you by the Public Hospitals Authority and the Sandilands Rehabilitation Center.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Welcome back on the Doctor's Zen with me, Dr. Denotha Archer Cartwright, family medicine specialist. We're talking about kids and COVID tonight. We just kind of summarized the low risk in kids, and low hospitalization, low deaths, and low sequelae or long-term COVID diseases in children. We listened to from Dr. Ben Carson require vaccination. And I know for some people this is going to be controversial, but it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be controversial. We should have these discussions and all opinions should be heard. And, you know, he makes a case that what are the benefits? What are we doing exactly? What are the outcomes that we're looking for when we don't have this, where this is a disease that really affects children? And I'm glad that it's not a disease that really affects children. That's cool. And we had other, you know, other doctors that I mentioned who said, you know, other vaccines, yeah. So, you know, this one in particular, it doesn't really fit that particular population. So that's something for us to consider. You have a comment, you want to jump into the conversation as we go along. The numbers tonight are 325-4316, 325-4259. So we can talk about that. And if we have time, we can talk a little bit about the Health and Safety Act that is going to replace, in a sense, the emergency orders. That's another very interesting topic. We'll try to get to some of that as well. But let's just look at why case numbers in terms of number of children, and see, data and information is really how it's presented. I can say to you that the cases are up, but why are the cases up and what does that mean? So cases can be up, but what we should be looking at is death and hospitalization. So you can have increased cases. If these are all asymptomatic or mild symptom cases, then is that such a big deal? Now, if the cases are increased hospitalization, increased death, then we have a problem. So there was some increase in children catching COVID or being pronounced with COVID. And why was that? Especially in America and other places, schools were opening, testing was actually being done. So the cases numbers went up, but the death and hospitalization really did not change. So kids started making up more cases, especially as older persons had already caught COVID. So the numbers started changing a little bit, but these were not changes in the severity of disease, which is a very, very important thing to understand. Among reported children, 0 to 0.26% of all COVID-19 deaths, and 7 states reported 0 child deaths. In states reporting 0.00% to 0.03% of all children, 19 cases resulted in death. So most of those places reported 0% death. 0%, that's a great number to have. 0% in most of in children in quite a few states, the numbers were so extremely low. Okay? Extremely low. Now, deaths from COVID, deaths from COVID. Incredibly rare among children. Studies find that the overall risk of death is very low in children. This is all over the place. Why are we discussing COVID and kids taking on additional risk? And thankfully, thank God, the risk has been extremely low. This is more like the flu for them than for any other group, right? Even doing better than the flu in many cases. Admissions and reported that 19 carries a lower risk of dying in intensive care young people than was previously thought. So even people who were thinking that the numbers were higher, what they found when they actually looked at the data, when they actually did the studies, was that this reprints published on MedRxiv, right? That's like a preprint journal that you go to. So when you come out with data, the data goes there first, it gets reviewed by peers, and then it becomes a lot more mainstream. So that's why when you hear me talk a lot of times, I'm talking about stuff that's coming out in the future. It may not have made mainstream news yet, That's a part of being a scientist. I try to read journals, preprint, early data, that type of things. And that's how you have to keep ahead, especially with COVID, which is a very fast-paced, real-time thing happening. That is what you have to do. One of the things that we read that is the MedRxiv, and a team of researchers, all hospitalizations and admissions, deaths, and reported for people younger than 18 in England. March 2020 and February 2021. That's 18 and below in all adults in England. So very, very small amount. And we talked about the fact that those who were affected, those cases are very, very ill. About half of those were individuals with underlying and complex disability with high healthcare needs, such as tube feeding or assistance with breathing. So these persons, these young people under 18 that did succumb to COVID were very, very sick. Some of them had breathing problems. They were already on ventilators. They were requiring people to manually feed them. Studies did not evaluate rates of less severe illnesses or debilitating long COVID in this particular study that can linger, but even low rates of severe acute disease is important news. All right, so that was very, very important. But attention, because we want none of our children harmed, but the risk remains low. So one of the preprints, the research published from the young people, ultimately in 7 studies and 19 countries. They then picked apart this disease and death from the data. What did they find? Some conditions, including obesity and cardiac or neurological conditions, were associated with higher risk of death or intensive care treatment. The researchers found that the absolute increase in risk was very small, according to the study's author, Rachel Harwood, a pediatric surgical registrar at Adler Hay Hospital, Children's Hospital in Liverpool, UK, told reporters at the media briefing. So a lot of the really good data. Okay. There's information coming out of Israel, Qatar, Japan, lots of other places. Don't know really what's going on in the US. COVID has become more of a political thing there. And so some of their stuff we have to, you know, watch out for. We're not seeing the type of and quality studies coming out from them as we'd like to. There are some stuff coming out from universities, but a lot of information is coming out from around the world. So for the other two preprints, the researchers focused on England, drawing on national-wide health data on intensive care admissions and deaths among those under the age of 18. The team then found that 6,338 hospital admissions, 259 children, young people required treatment in pediatric intensive care units. So these are countries with millions and millions of people. They are not seeing the numbers, an emergency in that particular population, right? So they did not see millions or hundred thousands of deaths when it came to the age of 18. And as we said, when we get into that 12 and under group, it's basically studies could to parents, so they basically felt that the studies should provide a comfort to parents who have been shielding their children who they thought might be vulnerable to severe complications from COVID-19. There's a general feeling among pediatricians that probably too many children were shielded during the first wave of the pandemic. Russell Viner, who studies adolescent health at the University College London, told reporters, in some cases, those efforts might have done more harm than good. Elizabeth Whitaker, an infectious disease specialist at the Imperial College of London, shields are very leaky, she said, and shields have not been perfect and have probably caused more stress and anxiety for families than benefit. So what we're finding is we were so stringent, we were so protective of the children that we might have done more harm than good. And we're seeing a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety, not just from the family, but the children themselves did not benefit from some of these policies. the work does not tackle this. So they didn't go into long COVID in this particular thing. But like we said, it's very limited because long COVID is related usually to severity of the disease, and we're not seeing the severe disease in children. Okay. So still, we talk about ventilation, you know, using masks and those types of things, and doing the protective things, hand washing and all of those things, you know, but this type of shielding of kids, you know, is very, very interesting. So even some of the articles that have proven that there really is no risk, you know, vaccination, and you want to know why, and that's why that Dr. Ben Carson really kind of came out and said it straight up. What are the benefits? Why are we ending everything with vaccination, even if we don't always see the benefit? Why is that controversial? Why can't we discuss that it may not be beneficial for everybody? And it may be something when we're looking at younger children, we need to really kind of think about that and weigh the risk. And let's get back to the way that we treat it, the way that we should treat science and look for the 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. You can join in if you have comments or concerns talking about kids, COVID, and any experiences that you may have. You can join. On top of that, there's a lot of articles that also discuss children going back to school and how this may be a positive thing. So I was really glad, and I want to give shout outs to MD Glenys Hannah Martin, minister, of her efforts of getting children back into school, because we know that there have been very negative effects. And how to get them back in. Just get them back in. Earlier last year, my daughter had gone back to school. They didn't have any problems. They were wearing masks and I guess doing a bit of social distancing and that kind of stuff. I thought that their system was really, really good. And it was the ministry that made them pull back from their policies and take the kids back out of school. And then there was a back and forth virtual, and now we're doing like, you know, some days in and some days out, but children just need to go back. We have to come to this conclusion now that their risk is minimal. Those children who are maybe unhealthy or have other issues may need a little bit more protection, may need to stay home and do the non-face-to-face reading, learning, but the risk and the benefits, what are they? Where are they? Out of school, we've seen children being affected by this, not getting the education they need, not getting the socialization that they need. And everywhere has said that the outcomes have been negative. All right? Everyone has said that the outcomes have been negative. And it just takes a conscious decision to go back. For some reason, you know, we keep on talking about going back to normal, but we're not talking about going back to normal. We seem to be talking about going back to something else. And I think it's time to go back to real normal. You know, what is normal going to be? Because some of the things that are just not normal. It's not a normal way of life. And I don't see living this way. I made a prediction on Dwight's morning show. It's not going to go anywhere. And it's about living with it. And we don't truly seem to be wanting to do that. If we're restricting our lives and we're doing all of these things that are so unnatural, we won't get back to normal. What do we really want to get back to normal? Because I think some people really don't want to get back to normal. I really don't think that they do. I think a lot of people have gotten very comfortable the way things are. And to go back to normal would not be a positive thing for them. And we should be having this discussion of what we want as normal. So this is the type of conversation. We don't need this very narrow view everything for us. But across the world, right? Now the academic year wraps up, into public health officials to help them plan for the coming school year. In the United Kingdom, children returned to school in March and April, and in France, the third COVID-19 shuttered schools around this time. But people go back in class by May. In the United States, more than half of schools resumed full-time instruction by early in-person learning. Right, so we're quite behind in that sense. People are starting to go back, and there is some in-person learning. But across the world, 770 million children still weren't going to school full-time by the end of June 2021. So I think the Bahamian will be right back to just kind of wrap this up. I just hear some sounds in the background that I want to clear. So we'll be right back with the doctors in with me, Dr. D. Archer, in just a few moments.
On the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Girl, Junior just showed me Bulla Boy in his phone.
What you mean? He take picture of that good for nothing boy?
Shh, you don't want Bulla hair, you say that. You know she always say that's my good child.
So what he doing in Junior phone?
Oh, he there cause the police looking for him. He on that wanted list.
Wanted persons in your phone now?
Yes, child. And when police won't find anybody quick, after something happened, they can send picture direct to your phone. Go to Google Play or App Store and search for Crack Crime Bahamas, then pick install and it will go straight to your phone.
There is also a section on missing persons.
Yes, girl. Everybody needs to get this app so police can tell us right away when these people go missing. Just like an alert system.
Yes, it has numbers for Crime Stoppers Bahamas so you can call and nobody knows you. Call directly to Miami and give the information without getting the other day. And when I hear Junior and his boys talking about where they hide those guns, I walk quick round the corner and call that number.
Calls 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
At a time when jobs are hard to find, crime is a concern, and Bahamians are uncertain about the future of the country, there is one paper you can rely on as your source of news and commentary. The Nassau Guardian delves deeper into the issues. We ask the tough questions. We tell your stories. If you haven't already, pick up a copy today. The Nassau Guardian, news and views that matter since 1844.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Welcome back to The Doctor's In with me, Dr. Dinothra Archer. Tonight, we are talking about COVID and kids, children, and the effects, not just COVID itself, but the policies and the things that have been seeing. And so we discussed that there's a low risk in children. Dr. Ben Carson doesn't recommend the vaccination in children. He wants us to take another look at that in particular. So if you want to join the conversation, 322-6232-3259. We're also looking at the effects of some of the policies like school closing that had on it. And then we'll take a little look and see if there are any things about the vaccine that we should also consider when we come to children. All right, so what we found is we were just looking over the article in nature.com about how school closing was affecting children and how some of these policies was affecting kids. And so low risk, like we said, eventually we had the information, we had the numbers. We know that this was a low risk thing for children. But across the world, 770 million children still aren't going to school full time by the end of June 2021. And more than 150 million kids in 19 countries had no access to in-person schooling. They were either learning virtually or had no schooling at all. Even when schools open back up, many kids won't return. The United Nations Cultural Organization shared that about 24 million school children will drop out as a result of the pandemic. Because they provided so many essential services in addition to learning, schools should be the last to close and the first to open, says Robert Jenkins, chief education for the UN's children's charity, UNICEF, in New York City. There are many countries in which parents can go out and have a nice steak dinner, but their seven-year-old is not going to school. That is a problem. It's definitely a problem. So there's a growing body of evidence suggesting that schools can be open safely, but that has not quelled the debate over whether they should be open. And if so, what steps should be taken to limit the spread of the virus? So September, when schools in many parts of the world will be open again, so this article was a little bit earlier, fresh concerns and debates will be in play. Many teenagers are looking to go back to school. We have to also consider low and middle income countries. Even with vaccination, not all people have access. So should that stop us? It really shouldn't. So this is what we need to now consider, because children need to go back. We don't know what's going to happen in the future. So every minute is basically precious. In March 2020, many of the schools shut the doors and little was known. And that's why many were allowed to close their doors. Schools were the first ones almost to close, and that did not help to flatten the curve. So what we found is kids being out of school really didn't help in the COVID crisis, because remember, their numbers are very low. They're not impacted by COVID, and they are not a large source of spread. And we really did not save any particular lives or anything like that. So as we look back on all of the things that happened in the past, we can now make better decisions moving forward, all right? But because for most respiratory illness, children are usually most at risk, and that's what I said in the very beginning, COVID is very unique where the children are actually least at risk, and that's a very, very good thing. So the article goes on, like I mentioned, that scientists soon discovered that kids are least likely to develop serious illnesses, but they just still weren't clear exactly why. So schools must open in the fall. That's what was tweeted last year by Donald Trump. You know, some people listened, some people didn't, but now we're seeing that this really, really, really should have happened. All right. And it's become problematic because that became a political thing. It was attached to Donald Trump at the time. It became, people didn't want to say kids need to go back to school, but that's what really needed to happen. And so we have to put all of that aside. We have to get back to the science. We have to acknowledge that children do not have high risk for COVID-19 or severe disease. Get the children back in school. So I applaud any effort to get the children back in school. All right. The article also points out the political aspects of the divide and why some decisions were made. And that's why the Bahamas needs to be extremely careful in implementing policies that we see in other countries, because the dynamics of those policies are sometimes based on the politics of that country. And so we don't need to get into the politics of any other country, make rational and clear decisions that will benefit Bahamians and benefit Bahamian children. Thankfully, we have a lot of information now, and we have reality to show us that the benefits of getting kids back to school, back to normal life, is going to be beneficial to us. Right? You know, they also talk about how other, you know, countries weren't immune to the squabbling, but I think a lot of us, especially with us being close to the U.S., we look to them for a lot of insight. And what we're finding is sometimes being small and not being involved in these things, it's best to just do things ourselves and look at the context for ourselves. All right. So in France, where schools were mostly remained open, the teens that actually protested in November saying the COVID-19 protections inside the classroom were adequate. So these children actually had to fight for their school. And so in some districts, teachers failed to show up to school as coronavirus swept up through the countries. We didn't really have that problem here. We had some back and forth from our teachers in terms of virtual teaching, but I would say on the whole, virtual school has not been beneficial to all children. I'll give the example of my daughter. It took a while for her to really kind of sit down and realize that, you know, I'm in school and I need to do certain things. And she's a pretty good student. I would say she also had a little bit of a dip when she started doing virtual. It's a bit better now, but I don't see that being a long time thing. And I'm very glad that the schools are getting back in. All right. Also, they found that there was issues with equity also becoming an issue. For the United States, it's more of a color, an economics thing. For us, I think it's the kids in the public school would have probably suffered a lot more. And the kids from the private schools really only suffered because of some of the trickle-down policies from the public schools. And so they would have gotten to do some of the virtual bi-learning, but we all know that there are still things going on in the public care system. And we don't know where some children went to. That is a very scary thought, knowing the recent incidents that have happened with abuse and all of this stuff. School tends to be an escape for a lot of children. And I can't imagine what may have been going on in some homes with the stress of COVID, with lockdowns. And I think we are going to be studying these events for quite some time. Caller, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, good night, Dr. D.
Good night, good night. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. But you know, the mind is heavy, Dr. D. I'm afraid that 90% of the people, I mean, I know some of the Caucasian people know what's going on, right? But I think the general population have a problem with really, really people saying what's going on. And I really can't understand why is that. And it's frightening. I was listening to you for 20 minutes now, right? But, you know, I know you was running some rebroadcasts, but I'm glad to see that you really, because it's on my mind. And what's important is the fact that the first year, the grade one students this year, I think are being affected the most because they didn't get to start within the public schools, right? And what I noticed, you know, my daughter, she was in a private preschool, but she's using the tablet, I mean, but she's talking to herself a lot and playing with herself a lot. And when they see one another, they always cry to go and play with one another. But, you know, they socialize. But most of her immediate family right now are much older than her, but it's the social aspect of it and the psychological aspect of it, right? It is telling on the students, you know. I was really trying to put in a private high school subsequently, right? But I think this is all by design, Dr. D. Most people can't see it because have you ever read Brave New World? The book Brave New World, Dr. D.
I think I watched it. Didn't they make a movie about it?
Also, you notice in the book how they changed the way they were manufacturing the children, and then they had a rug, and then they had books on one side, and they had plants on one side, and they would send an electric current through the rug, juice the children to hate books and to hate nature. And then they would also, one of the things I remember was they would let the children play naked, right? So they would become sexually promiscuous later on down in life. And, you know, they talk about the drug soma. And I think Aldous Huxley is more right in that society would love their servitude. They talk about the drugs and how the woman would be promiscuous and family life and marriage and all that. You get the concept of the book from the quick video, right? You got the concept of what they really want.
I think if you look at the thread of most dystopian novels and movies, you know, they kind of all have this similar thread of where we're leading to, and a lot of it plays into what's going into society.
I'm heavy. My mind is heavy. And people get mad at me for being arrogant, but it's not arrogant. It's confidence, and it's willing to say what's going on. They're not even juxtaposing the biblical text, Daniel, Revelation, Romans, etc. But what is hurtful for me is that the movie Vendetta, V for Vendetta. Did you see that also?
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, but you see this where we headed towards the dystopian panopticon. Now, about 2 years ago, almost 3 years ago, I had said, Malcolm Chauvin, Leon Williams, that's the name of the guy who used to run Batelco, and see how this is on. And I said boldly that they want to connect us to the internet. Now, most mindless, readless, jealous, play-hating sheep don't understand what's going on, Dr. D. It's right before us. So what's happening now, I'm seeing all of the, about the brain melds, the brain-to-brain communication, and also the philosophy of controlling the brain from sending 14 milliamps or less. There's a certain part of the brain just beyond consciousness and whatever. And so what happens is they plan on really uploading our consciousness to the cloud. I mean, this is all on the internet. This is...
I don't know what happened there, caller. Button cut off. I don't mind him talking, producer, because, you know, he talks fast, but he does talk a lot of things that are kind of important. So if you get a chance, you can call back. But, you know, in the midst of that, and it might sound a little new, but, you know, a lot of people are just really, really comfortable. People don't want to think about, you know, things being negative. People want things to be positive. A lot of people are just trying to survive and live through their life. A lot of these concepts are very, very overbearing. And I think part of the reason why I've been kind of busy with the, so I apologize with some of the replays, but I've been very heavy-hearted right now about what is going on. And, you know, even as a physician, it seems like there's this whole lot of pressure on us as well to be a part of a particular narrative or story. It's really kind of almost hell in a sense, because a lot of the things that have been happening are weighing heavy on my heart as well. And I don't know exactly everything that is going on. I know from my perspective, I think we could have taken a different approach for a lot of different things. We need to be more open. And I don't want things to turn the way that I see it happening in a lot of other countries, where we have this divisiveness between people. I wanted to get a little bit into the new Health and Safety Act that's been talking, but we won't get into all that tonight. I'll probably do it next week. But I'm very kind of disturbed about what I'm seeing in terms of those rules that they want to put into law. You know, there's a lot of discrimination there. We have the scientific knowledge that vaccinated and unvaccinated people is not a big difference. It's not a big difference. But yet the laws are actually creating a difference between people. We're coexisting right now, and there are some discriminatory things that are happening now with the restaurant. I just came from Florida. There are no form of mandates. People are living just fine. People are eating indoors. People are going to games. People are doing all kinds of things. And so to then come and create another reality in which you're forcing particular things, I don't understand how that fits into anything that we've learned or any way that we've kind of dealt with science. Caller, you're back on the air. Caller?
Yes, good night. You know, hello, Dr. D.
Yes.
I appreciate this, you know, because, you know, I don't really think. I can appreciate, you know, sometimes I really appreciate you and Nahaja, right? And Aaron, you know, because, you know, it's the deviation. I'm more like living in the prison of the mind, because you don't do what they want you to do, what others do, and say what others want you to say, right? A conformed, mindless, thoughtless, just conformed sheep, right? It's a problem. So what I'm saying is, I listen to you, and you know the thing is, it's hard to disagree with you, Dr. D. It's really hard. And so what I'm seeing now with the education system is very disheartening for me. And I have a big daughter, she's in UB, and then I have this 5-year-old, right? And so what is hurtful for me is the fact that what you're saying is true, yet frightening. But so the thing is, with the educational system, you're trying to see, it's designed to create a class of slave-like people. And so what I really get these subliminal messages, you know, the earth belongs to the rich, even though the Bible says the meek will inherit the earth. The earth belongs to the rich. Most people can't even see it right now because, you know, when the Bible says you cannot buy or sell, we know that's the business license, and then they determine the selective oligarchical structure, right? Right or wrong. And then the prices can go up so high you can't even buy. But most people can't even see it because supply chain construct is really man-made. And so when you look at the force mandates, I see where the Supreme Court frees the Biden vaccine mandates. You saw that, right?
It's just unconstitutional.
Mainstream media. Mr. Dr. D was right, but we know that mainstream media is about a mass psychosis, mass conformity, and mass deception. That's what it is. I mean, people just get mad, but...
We have to be careful here because, you know, I was very concerned. I even reached out of the bill that they want to pass to help build. I mean, you can't put that in law. That's unconstitutional.
Are you talking about the vaccinated?
Yeah, fully vaccinated. You can't have 20 people over to your house unless the people are vaccinated. You can't have this, you can't do that. You can't go to a kid's game without being vaccinated. You can't participate in sports. These don't have to be mandates, but it's just like mandates.
I was speaking to Dwight this morning, and people are so mindless. I don't know how they put up. I mean, like, they don't listen to what you're saying. The caller, people like to criticize you. They say 52 still didn't answer the question. I did answer the question. The fact that I agreed with what the government was doing, I said social distance, wear your mask, and that's enough. But they didn't get the concept. So the concept was just, I wasn't down with the vaccine mandate. You could just do everything else. But the vaccine mandate is unscientific because, well, one thing, it couldn't be where we are today without pseudoscience and someone proving pseudoscience wrong to move on. Science just didn't start from anywhere. It started from something based on something, right or wrong. You understand what I'm saying? The scientific method.
Yeah. 52, 1 second. So remember when you started off talking to me, you talked about that dystopian story where they were using the impulses, right?
Yeah.
So in science, we call that, you know, the experiment of Pavlov's dog.
Pavlov was a psychiatrist.
Right. So what you do is it's conditioning. So it's conditioning. So the word science has become a tool for conditioning.
Yes.
And what they've done is they've replaced science with pseudoscience, emotions, and particular narratives.
Yeah, but it's scary, Doctor.
And because science has been good to us, you know, we've done so many things with science.
And they're preying on that.
What we found is that what they do, replace it with something else. And most people aren't noticing.
Dr. D, I think you, boy, listen, I think you're the best. You know, listen, Dr. D, and what I'm saying is with this concept, right? It's unbelievable that they're doing it right before our eyes. You know, on October 4th, there was a conclave in Vatican City where religious leaders, politicians, and scientists fused together in a meeting. And I watched all of these different world leaders sign this book. And for me, it's scary because I know what it means to me. But the thing is, nobody wants to hear the truth. But this is why I continue to call, because one day I will be gone and they'll remember. Listen to me. It's the message that I carry is beyond me, you know. So people always say,
people are afraid of the truth. And laymen like yourself, most people are not reading or looking up things in that depth. They don't understand what they're talking about. And when people are afraid of what they don't understand.
Yeah, because they said I didn't answer the question when Dwight asked me the question. But I guess because they didn't realize what I was saying. The only problem was the forced vaccine mandate.
Well, that's a major part of it. So you can't agree with what the government's doing. Because a big chunk of what they're doing requires people being fully vaccinated. And if you read the when you read what fully vaccinated is, it's not two doses or one dose. It's whatever is deemed fully vaccinated.
Yes, and so, that the is a, so what,
once, once again, around, but... once again, we seem to be copying and pasting out of the world book.
Yes, but Dr. D, I want you to, I would say something I just like for you to comment. Mm-hmm. You know, what I've realized is, right, you see, most people don't realize, they're not thinking, and I'm getting in trouble for thinking. The dosages, I think Moderna is 100 milliliters, Pfizer is 30 milliliters, or vice versa. And then Johnson & Johnson, they gave the dosage per milliliter or whatever, per microliter, right? And themselves are part of the experiment to see the efficacy of the different dosages. This is why the boosters are less. And so, you know, you saw the situation with Pfizer, with the breaching of the regulatory oversights and all of the different ethical problems as far as laboratory.
That's not playing on mainstream media, right? So the Indians are talking about it. The rest of the world is talking about it, but by the time the average person catches up, because they're going to tell you that's absolute crap until 3 months later.
Yeah, but it's more whistleblowers than one. And the lady took pictures.
And all of this stuff is coming out is, to me, a big reason why we need to step back and take a look at what we're doing. Yeah, and especially when it comes to children.
Yeah, but notwithstanding the emails between Dr. Fauci and Dr. Daszak, the fact that the Wuhan Institute of Virology didn't allow the scientists from the WHO. And so even the inactions of the great Leviathan to the east, China, right? It plays into our mind. But I'm afraid that the truth is going to lose this one because the sheep is willing for a shepherd to lead their hand and lead them throughout the land. They don't have a mind of their own. And people who have a mind of their own, they are lambasting and talking to them. But I cannot give up. Even, you know, because even as I had a conversation with Mr. Strawn this morning, I can see that people really, really just, like, they find a way to criticize you. They find a way to say something without nothing. There's nothing that the fact that they agreed with what the government is doing, but I was just against the mandate. And I wanted Strawn to read the article about the CDC misleading the public on, it's online, about the rate of the outdoor transmission dynamics. You see what I'm saying? And so I think fear is what really is driving this paradigm.
Yep, it's fair.
And
it was for our community, doctors, to quell the fear. Some of us participated in the fear.
Yeah, but I looked at the immune system the other day. You know, I always looking at it, and I look at it. Sometimes I study the diagrams. Well, the dendritic cells link the innate and the adaptive immune response. And so there's about 20 or 19 components between the innate and the adaptive. And so what happens is the adaptive is all a chain reaction. So, but it's the latter one to respond to a pathogen. So what is hurtful to me is, I originally thought it was only three types of T cells and a few types of B cells. But I found there's six types of T cells. You get virgin T cells, helper T cells. But it's so complicated. I don't think most people
understand. Yes, and 52. I always tell you, you got to keep it simple. The people out there aren't reading about dendritic cells. You got to keep it as simple as possible so that people can understand.
There's a doctor who studied dendritic cells for 16 years. And so, right? What I'm saying is, each component of the healing has an ability to do something that scientists are just discovering through the scientific method. But without questioning things, science wouldn't be where it is today. And so, do me a favor, Dr. Mm-hmm. I want you to read, look up, there's a French scientist called Simon de Saint-Simon. S-I-M-O-N. And he made a statement in the late 1800s, that scientists are superior to all men. I think it's something like similar to God, and scientists will rule the world one day, and it's time. Not verbatim, but it was scary for me when I read it to see the ideas from way back then. And then, of course, you had pseudoscience.
Yeah, we got to wrap up 52.
You had pseudoscience like Galton and Charles Darwin, who came in with these social biology eugenical concepts that most people, the people are running the world now, it's not me who's the enemy. It's the globalist eugenicist. Have a good night, Dr. D. I think he's the best.
All right. I'm sorry. Thank you. So thank you, 52. We didn't even get into, especially with younger persons, they're more likely to get side effects in terms of being vaccinated. That is also a conundrum why younger people tend not to do as well with it. We're seeing some issues with myocarditis and heart problems and different things. And they keep saying these things are rare, but You know, the incidences are there. And I think it's something we have to look to in the future. So I'm very concerned about very young children being vaccinated. I'm just going to be plain and simple about that. And I think that we need to take another look. I think we need to take a step back. And I think we need to make a decision that's going to be positive for Bahamian children. I know that people are in a lot of fear. I know that you've been seeing numbers and numbers and numbers, but it's time for us to make decisions with clear minds and clear heads. And it's in a divisive way. We've seen that what that's doing in other countries. Let the Bahamas be a beacon of light. Let us be able to do things differently, but it takes bravery. It takes courage. It takes our mental resources to think for ourselves. The time is now. True science searches for the truth, not a truth, but the truth. We don't need to be gods, but we can be better than this. We can be better than this. And doctors and scientists should not be in fear of giving their opinion. When that happens, there is a problem here. There is a problem when there only one side can be spoken. And so for all that's happening in this country, the life and death and abuse of children. And so that is my opinion. I am very cautious about this particular thing. And so I want to thank everybody for listening. I went over a minute, you know, but this is The Doctor's In with Dr. D. Archer, brought to you by Medical Concierge Services every Tuesday night on Guardian Radio. I will be back, and we are going to talk next week about this Medical Safety Act that's out there. I think it's important. So I want to see you all next week on The Doctor's In with me, Dr. D. Archer. Thank you very much for listening. Good night.